Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Hello?
Joshua, it's Jill Pastrnak.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
You're busy.
How are you?
I bet you're terribly busy. You know what?
It's been busy.
We need to have a separate series of Joshua Bell interviews because I think this is of the fifth or the sixth time I've interviewed you, and you are doing so very, very much that that I can't keep up with you anymore.
Well, thanks for putting up with me again.
It's just wonderful. Your newest album, Yet Another Four Seasons. What was the reason that you started to do that?
Well, you sound tired when you say yet another four seasons.
Well, you know, it's
one of the great pieces of. No, there are many recordings of it, but it's one of the most exciting pieces in the repertoire, and you know, every violinist has a different approach to it. There's so much room for you know, freedom and individual expression, and I felt ready to put out my version of it after years of playing it, and then finding a great partnership with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, touring with them a lot with this piece, and just felt really ready to put it down on disc.
Now, you're really doing it the way they did it in the Baroque era, where you're conducting the orchestra. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's really as far as I'm concerned, the only way to play the piece, and it's the way it's usually done these days. The music is really designed to be led from the first violin, from the solo violin. There really weren't conductors back then, and so it's the most natural way to play it. And it's a very small group. It's, 20 some musicians, and they all, they're incredible chamber musicians, and that's what it really feels like, chamber music.
I was just going to say it's really chamber music where you have to listen to each other. And I guess in the old days, they called the first violin the leader. Isn't that right? Somehow. And then, of course, he would be conducting and, of course, playing. These are concerti, really.
Exactly. And everything comes from the first violin. Sometimes the leader is playing with the group, sometimes solo. But everything is really led from that first violin position. So that's the position I take with the Four Seasons, and it's a role I love to do in other music as well. I've been leading the Academy of St. Martin's and also the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra over the last several years, and doing play conducting, you might call it, with repertoire, even the symphonies, Beethoven symphonies and Mozart symphonies and things, all led from the first violin. I love doing that.
That's really quite incredible. I think you are one of the few that are perhaps doing the Beethoven and Mozart. I don't know about that, but
yeah, it's very exciting to, and I think it's fun for the orchestras too, because they have to take on a more active role for them. They don't have quite as much information instruction from a conductor with a stick, but it makes them really treat, you know, a Beethoven symphony like chamber music as well. It can be actually, I find, more excited. They get more excited doing it that way.
And probably, I'm sure that this has impacted on you tremendously in the way you are interpreting the works. I mean, you've played them for years, but this must be a very new experience for you in terms of how you see the music.
Well, certainly, yeah. When I, you know, I've, for instance, the Mendelssohn or Beethoven concertos, I've done them over the years with conductors. And when I've had to lead it myself, it's forced me to be much more aware of everything going on, as one should anyway, but it really forces you to do that. And I'm required to really lead the rehearsal and really conceive of the piece in every aspect of it. And it helps the solo part tremendously to feel that involved in all rather than delegating the rehearsal, you know, to the mm-hmm. to conductor to kind of rehearse the orchestra. This is a much, for me, a very natural way of doing. Having said that, of course, they're
it's a tremendous
with
responsibility.
A great, with yeah. a great working with a great conductor, also, it's a great experience, and I still love doing that and do much of the time. But I do, maybe I'm sort of working my way up to being a conductor myself.
Well, you just answered my next question. I think there may be a hidden agenda here somewhere, maybe.
Well, it's like all actors want to direct, you know. It's the same in music, I guess, too. It's fun to get to do repertoire like symphonies of Beethoven and others, you know. It's repertoire I never got to do until recently, I see the appeal why many instrumentists become conductors.
But do you feel that there's a much greater responsibility? I mean, does that take away from focusing on being a soloist?
I think it's just part of being a well-rounded musician. I think it's one can do many things, and in the past, you know, 100 years ago, every violinist was also a composer and was also a conductor, and we've become more specialized, you know, in our generation. But I think it's a very natural thing to do, wear these many hats.
Yes, well, it's certainly a lot to do, I would say, as well, because even as a soloist, one does concentrate pretty much on what one has to do as a soloist. I have a question for you. You also have on the album the Devil's Trill Sonata by Tartini. Why did he call it the Devil's Trill? Is it because it's devilishly hard, or what?
It is a catchy name, but it is devilishly hard, and the trill, which is sort of at that time was traditionally used as an ornament, you know, here and there to sort of spice up a note by putting a little turn on it. He took that trill and just took it to extremes and had it constantly throughout the piece and using it in sort of very devilish sounding ways. And according to the story is that he actually experienced a dream where the devil came and played the violin and played this tune with all these trills, and he woke up and he wrote it down. That's at least the legend behind
it.
Oh,
my
goodness. And then he performed it.
These violinists.
He was a virtuoso.
All of them. I think they had to add this dimension to their very dramatic persona, you know. But it says also in your liner notes that you are not playing the Chrysler version. Did Fritz Chrysler do a specific, did he change the sonata in any way?
Actually, he did, and I grew up with the Chrysler version. I didn't know of any other version when I was a, you know, 13-year-old and first playing this piece. Chrysler, as he did with many things, he arranged them and put his own little take on it. So he sort of spiced up the accompaniment for piano, you know, in the way that sounds, that's very much Chrysler, and he changed some of the harmonies, and I love the fact that in Chrysler's day people had the freedom to do that sort of thing. We've become so concerned these days about playing everything very perfectly authentic, but which is a good and bad thing. But for me, I decided when I started playing it again many years later, I decided to take a look at the early editions, and I noticed that a lot of things were very different from Chrysler's version, and I enjoy doing it this way. And of course, playing with a harpsichord is different than I would have done when I was a kid playing with the piano. So,
and you, of course, were talking about how you admired the harpsichordist.
That's true. Well, the harpsichordist John Constable, he plays a lot with the Academy of St. Martin's, and we've toured a lot together. And I thought he brought a lot to the Four Seasons. He really, because the harpsichord part in the Four Seasons is very bare. What's written down on the
yes.
page, but it's really left up to the harpsichordist to improvise much of it, and just based on the chord, sort of like jazz musicians do today, based on certain, you know, charts and chords. They have a lot of freedom.
I think that was very much done. I mean, that was left up to them to improvise bass or figured bass or whatever.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And that's so every, you know, harpsichord part of player does it differently, and I felt that his balance of improvisation but not overly doing it to be distracting. I thought his taste was great, and also he injected, I think, a lot of humorous and fun things into it that made it a lot of fun. So I used him on the Tartini as well. So I think it balances out the volley well.
Now, did you do anything with the cadenzas for the Tartini? Because I know you've done in other works that you've played, you've really contributed a great deal to the cadenzas, other works like the Carigliano thing. And I think, what was it that just recently had done again? You certainly helped a great deal with the writing for the violin for orchestrators and arrangers.
Well, I do enjoy working with composers, and I can't say, I contribute my two cents here and there, but certainly when it comes to the cadenzas, that's where the violinist can, it was traditionally meant to improvise or write his own take on it. And, you know, with the Brahms and the Beethoven and even the Mendelssohn, I actually had the sort of probably the nerve to audacity to replace Mendelssohn's cadenza and put in my own, but that was which is one of the more interesting challenges I made for myself. So I do enjoy doing that. And the Tartini, there's one place at the end where I used to play Kreisler's big cadenza for the Tartini, and I've put in my own little one, which hopefully sounds devilish enough, and so yeah, it's fun to that aspect of it. And the Tartini, there's also plenty of room for little ornaments and changes. When you take a repeat, you can play around with the improvisations a bit.
Well, I think really, in truth, as you said earlier, that the composers of the earlier times really expected a lot from the performers, the musicians, in the sense of contributing their own creativity. And it was improvisation, perhaps enhancement as well.
Absolutely. And music was, it wasn't set in stone. You know, the notes were just a starting point. And I think it's important for us musicians to remember that, because we learn in school to respect the page, mm-hmm. and all that. And that's very, very important. But sometimes you lose perspective and realize that in a way that's sort of the starting point. And even with composers that are much more specific as it got, you know, later, you know, people like Debussy and Stravinsky, mm-hmm. and all these, they became obsessed with really instructing every little thing. Even when it gets like that, it should sound as if it's very improvised, and sometimes playing music, Baroque music like this, it helps you remember what music is. Music is mm-hmm. not an academic thing. In the end, it's got to sound composed and improvised and on the spot.
Yes, and I think when one is so deeply involved and has reached a level of expertise, that it's very hard not to do that, because you want to fly a little bit, I guess, in a sense, and to create your own. So tell us a little bit more about your ambitions of conducting. That doesn't mean no more violin playing, does it?
Oh, no. And I don't call myself a conductor in any way. I just enjoy, I've enjoyed what I've done leading from the violin, and probably will start dabbling and dropping the violin for certain performances and waving my arms around a bit. I enjoy the rehearsals, you know, with the orchestra and playing symphonic repertoire. So I see myself doing that on occasion. But I certainly don't intend to drop the violin playing or the performing. Hopefully I'll be doing that for the rest of my life.
Well, you can be waving the bow around, I guess, a little bit while you're playing.
Yes.
What are your plans for the most immediate present? Are you going to be touring again?
I'm pretty much always touring. So I just finished a very long summer of popping around to lots of different festivals and going to Europe and South America, et cetera. And didn't have much of a break before now the fall season starts. So I'm on the road about 200 some days a year.
Oh my.
But that's what I enjoy, you know, the most. As much as I love recording, for me, the live performance, that's really, really, the music really lives.
You've really done some amazing, amazing albums. I'm so terribly impressed on many, many levels. You really are comfortable in every genre, in the sense, I mean, you have classical and then you go to a more kind of Broadway type of thing, but you do feel it. And it's very, very nice to hear you, you know, adapt yourself to the various styles. I guess that probably makes you feel rather well-rounded, doesn't it?
Well, you know, being a classical musician, I mean, classical music, what exactly does that mean, classical music? Because it really spans everything from Bach to, you know, to modern, the modern music of today, which is a huge span. And we're just trained, I mean, we're just used to changing styles depending on what music we're playing. So it's not that much of a stretch to play Gershwin or Bernstein or, it's all part of music. So we're used to that. And in the end, you just have to play the music that you do feel something for. I don't attempt to try to interpret or change or to play in the style of something that I just don't relate to it at all. So I play the music that I love. And if you do that, I think you're going to be convincing, at least on some level.
Very convincing on all of the things that you've done. You have a lot of passion and sensitivity. It's really a joy to listen to you play all the various things that you're doing. Any new commissions or any new concertos that you're planning to prepare?
I'm working on it now. I'm trying to figure out what the next one is, and I'm hoping to find the right partnership with the composer to get something for next year. I have a couple of offers from people willing to put up the commission money to for a composer, and I think it's really important that we continue to encourage, you know, new works, and so that's always exciting. But I'm not exactly sure what the next one is yet.
What are you taking on tour with you in terms of repertoire?
Well, in this few week period, I'm playing a lot of things. Sometimes it works out this way where I'm playing in a very short span the Tchaikovsky Concerto, the Four Seasons, the Saint-Saëns, number 3, the John Corigliano's Red Violin Concerto, which he wrote for me.
Which is
a lot
really
of things.
Amazing, yeah.
So I get to do a lot of things, and sometimes it gets a bit stressful to try to juggle all those things, but it also keeps it fresh and exciting not to play the same piece week after week.
So this is your newest album, The Four Seasons and the Tartini, and I guess we'll have to wait a little bit for the next one, right?
Yeah, I guess so. This is it for the time being.
Well, you see, we've got a tremendous appetite for Joshua Bell because every time you release something, it's a smash hit. Even the Red Violin, people are still, you know, requesting that all the time. And for me, I still feel that was the very beginning. The Corigliano Violin Concerto is really, I think, the first movement is the Chaconne, isn't it, from the Red Violin?
Yeah,
when Corigliano
wrote the score for the film, I had asked him to write a piece that I could perform in the concert stage, and not just a kind of collection of vignettes from the film. So he came up, he actually got a commission and wrote this Chaconne, which is an 18-minute. Really wonderful piece. Which then several years later, just a few years ago, he decided to turn it into a full violin concerto. So he used that exactly
that was
the
way first
it was,
movement, isn't it?
As the
yeah,
first movement, and he actually added 3 movements to it, to the piece, which relate to the film music, but in no way is it sort of a rehash, thrown together thing. It's significant in its own right, and I believe will be considered historically one of the important violin concertos of the 21st century. I think already many violinists are playing it, which is unusual for new pieces. So often you get the first performance, which becomes the last performance of a new piece, and it's hard to get other violinists to take it on. There are many people already playing.
I think you're responsible for that, I must say, because your performance of it is really spectacular.
And once again,
you really do move one when one listens to you play. And I think, in all of the things you record, even the Bernstein and the West Side Story arrangements, you're right there, and one certainly feels that you are a consummate musician.
Thanks for saying that. But really, the stars are Bernstein and Vivaldi, and the composers are the real stars there.
Well, you're a good translator, and we look forward to the next effort that you make. And if you have the time, I guess now it's a matter of just performing, I guess, right?
Yes. Well, Sorry, I didn't understand.
What I'm saying is you're going to save yourself a little bit and just perform now in terms of no new projects right on the horizon.
Yeah, I've got some, just brewing, a few things brewing, and actually another soundtrack coming out, and was involved with another film, which is fun every once in a while to do, a film called Defiance, which is be coming out in December, I believe. A big Hollywood movie, World War II movie, that but very powerful score.
Who composed the music?
James Newton Howard, and it's a very good score, and a lot of good violin stuff in it. So I continue to look for projects like that. I mean, nothing I doubt will compare to the Red Violin. The scope of the Red Violin is a film as far as the violin involvement, but I do enjoy doing them.
Well, it's always interesting to hear what you have to say and to listen to what's on the horizon for you, Josh, and the very best. And once again, it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks for talking with me, Josh.
Okay. Best of luck.